Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the NPPC Media Briefing. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star one on your telephone. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. If you require any further assistance, please press star zero. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Mr. Jim Monroe, Assistant Vice President of Communications with NPPC. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much. Thanks to everybody for joining the call today. The COVID-19 pandemic has had a disastrous impact on pork producers. We have on the call to share their stories and to reinforce the need for additional federal government assistance to sustain our hog farmers through this unprecedented challenge. We'll open the call with remarks from A.B. Roth. A.B. is a pork producer from Wisconsin, and he's also president of the National Pork Producers Council. A.B.'s remarks will be followed by brief comments from three other hog farmers, Mike Poshton from Iowa, Kevin Hugeson from Minnesota, and Chad Lehman from Illinois. They'll share a bit about their farms and how the pandemic has affected them and the industry, and we'll then turn to your questions. During the Q&A, you may hear from others on the line with us, including NPPC's Vice President Terry Walters. Terry is a producer from Minnesota, and NPPC staff, including Neil Dirks. He's our CEO, and Nick Giordano, NPPC's Vice President and Counsel Global Government Affairs, is also on the line. With that, I'm going to turn it over to A.V. A.V., the floor is yours.
Thank you, Jim. I'm A.V. Roth, a producer from Wisconsin. Thank you all for joining the call. We organized this press briefing to send a simple message. The U.S. Senate must act quickly to support U.S. pork producers who remain in crisis due to the coronavirus pandemic. Much of what has made the United States the finest pork-producing nation in the world and afforded a rural lifestyle relished by thousands of hog farmers and their families is in jeopardy. Plant capacity has improved in recent weeks thanks to the Defense Production Act invoked by President Trump on April 28th. But significant plant capacity shortfalls remain, and it's unclear when we will return to full processing capacity. Hogs continue to back up on farms, causing an unprecedented financial crisis that is taking a severe emotional toll on farmers. A lifeline has been extended through provisions, including in the HEROES Act, passed by the House on May 15th. We are particularly thankful to House Ag Committee Chairman Colin Peterson for his leadership in pushing for these provisions. They address the range of issues that are decimating our farm sector, including compensation for euthanized livestock and additional direct payments to offset the severe market losses incurred by producers as hog values have plummeted. Collectively, U.S. pork producers will lose at least $5 billion this year. We appreciate the $1.6 billion allocated for pork producers in the USDA's Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, but it falls short of what is needed to sustain thousands of impacted producers. Unlike the USDA program, the HEROES Act does not mandate payment restrictions, ensuring that relief is extended to all farmers who are most heavily invested in pork production. We ask that USDA maintain this structure in any implementation. The House bill also calls for compensation for euthanized livestock that can't be processed into the food supply due to ongoing COVID-related packing plant capacity reductions. In addition to the staggering lost value of hogs, pork producers face mounting costs associated with depopulation and safe disposal. Other favorable livestock agriculture provisions in the HEROES Act include $300 million in funding for the National Lab and Animal Health Surveillance Network. These labs are being tapped to conduct coronavirus testing, and this funding could also be applied for crucial animal health initiatives, such as African Swine Fever Prevention. The bill also includes funding to support farmers' mental health programs. Sadly, there is a significant need for these programs, given mounting financial and emotional stress faced by farmers. These provisions represent the lifeline pork producers need if we are to maintain a highly competitive and innovative pork production system in the United States. Without them, we will see thousands of hog farmers liquidate their family farms, resulting in a contracted and more consolidated industry. That's not good for the American consumer or the rural economy. We are urging the Senate to adopt these provisions in companion legislation with all due haste and to work with the House to deliver much needed additional relief to American farmers. Jim?
Thanks very much, AV. I'd now like to ask three other producers to share a bit about their farms and how they've been impacted by the pandemic. We're going to start with Mike Poshtian. Mike is a sixth-generation hog farmer from Walcott, Iowa. He's also the current president of the Iowa Pork Producers Association. Mike?
Hey, thanks, Jim, and thank you all for being on the call this afternoon. We certainly appreciate your interest in what's going on farms. I had a conversation the other day with a gentleman who remarked that someone had mentioned to him the other day that the grocery store shelves were fully stocked and meat and eggs were there, and things must be back to normal on the farm. And unfortunately they're not, and it's going to be a long time until they are. And that's what I see as one of the dangers right now, is that everyone's lives are starting to get a little more closer to normal. Left with a mess on our farms that's going to take a long time to work through. And that it just makes it so difficult for farmers to make any kind of plans whatsoever. The normal production cycle for a pig is, nearly 10 months from conception till those pigs go to market. And, that requires a lot of time, resources, and work to raise pigs and get them to that point. My wife and I were weaning pigs this morning, and it got me thinking about it. These pigs that we're weaning today, they're about 5 months into that journey. So they're about at the halfway point here. And, normally I'm just thinking about, what do I need to do to make sure these pigs have one great day after another, everything they need, get them to thrive and to grow as fast as they can. But I find myself not thinking about it anymore. I'm starting to think about, is there a future for these pigs? Where are they going to go in 5 months? Because I don't know that we're going to be out from under this backlog that's developed by then. And, that it's just crippling for farmers to be in this situation where we're basically having to take it day by day at this point. Most producers I talk to they're getting about 24 hours notice now when they finally are put into a processor. Everybody's just scrambling in the meantime to try to find enough space on the farm to keep all of our pigs. That has to be number one. We've changed the range for pigs.
Hey, Jim, this is Neil. And Mike, you're breaking in and out.
Nope. Sorry about that.
Maybe we can come back to Mike in a second.
Yeah, sorry, I was on mute. Mike, can you hear us right now?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay. Sorry to make you do this, but maybe back up. I don't know, 20 seconds or so. You were breaking up pretty bad there, and I think we all missed some of those comments.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry about that. You know, we have some tremendous thunderstorms rolling through our area, so that might be part of the issue here right now. But
you sound good now.
Anyway. Okay. But as I was saying, you know, it's become very challenging to try to manage our animals right now, because we don't know when we're going to be able to clear barns out and make room for new animals. So in the meantime, we're trying to accommodate everyone as much as we can. But it's hard on everybody. It's hard on the farmers. It's hard on the folks who are supporting us, the truckers, the folks who are delivering feed to us. You know, everyone's having to kind of just take it day by day and having to kind of just go with the flow here. And, you know, we really appreciate all of our partners in this who are doing their best to make the best of a very bad situation. But, you know, the reality is, There's no end to this in sight right now, and so it's really hard for us to make some long-term plans about what we need to be doing on our farms to adjust to this new reality. So I think I'll just stop my comments there, but you know, more than happy to answer any questions you might have later on.
Thank you, Mike. I'm now going to introduce Kevin Hugeson. Kevin is a fourth-generation hog farmer from Granada, Minnesota. Kevin, the floor is yours.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. And likewise, I appreciate this opportunity and for everyone that's on the call to listen about what's going on in the pork industry. One blessing that we have had in our family is that our daughter and son have both come back to be involved in our pig operations, so they would be obviously the fifth generation. And that's probably one of the greatest joys and privileges that you can have as a farmer, is if your kids come back. And I've kind of through the years kind of said, well, never take anything for granted. You know, pork production has been very stable for us and a great means of creating a livelihood. And I always kind of set that tongue in cheek a little bit, thinking that we can control everything and that we've been able to be resilient in numerous ways. But this COVID-19 is a whole nother beast that we've never experienced, and just so many things are out of our control. And in terms of when we deliver our pigs, if they can be taken, how it affects labor. And with that being said, the financial implications are just very strong. We, if you're on a cash type of a bidding situation for your pigs or how they're priced, you're losing $60 to $70 a pig right now, and that's not sustainable for the long term. And that's happening whether you're a small producer or a large producer, and it's it could completely change the way American agriculture looks if this continues and there's no relief come in for the pork producer. One thing too, in our area, there were many pork producers that have always been involved in pork production in some ways, and we have a lot of family farms that are contract finished growers for us. And what that means is that they own the barn and we put pigs in there and we pay them rent for doing that. And that has a huge impact on our community. And in the county that I live in here in southern Minnesota, how the pig industry goes is how the economy goes. And it just truly defines what happens. And the pork industry is so pivotal and so important to the whole economy of this whole county. And actually the whole Midwest is that same way. And so we are so dependent on everything that it gives to us. One thing too that's kind of been mentioned is the packing industry. And we've been very fortunate with our packer that they've been able to keep the workers coming in to the slaughter plants and to keep up on the daily kills there. But now recently they've had struggles with employees coming down with COVID-19 and not being able to be at work for whatever reason. And so you think you kind of have your week planned out, and usually we try to plan things out 2-3 weeks in advance with loads or and also our pig flow, because there's always pigs coming right behind the ones that get sold. And all at once now we need to make some changes and start thinking about how we either slow the pigs down in growth or start double stocking. And we always want to do what's best for the pig and the health of them and the welfare of them. And so it becomes very challenging and lots of stress and just lots of tough decisions to make every day in terms of what's best for the pig and also the financial part. And usually I've been able to stay very positive and to be proactive in our pork operation, because we're very blessed by that. But just all the unknowns going on, they really take a toil on a person. And as an owner, I've worked hard to still be positive to our employees, our contract growers, our family and everything, but it is challenging. And so we just ask that there would be compensation for the pork producers, for ourselves or other ones that are in this trying time. So thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for sharing that. Next up is Chad Lehman. Chad is a third-generation hog farmer from Eureka, Illinois. Chad?
Thank you, Jim. Good afternoon, and I also thank you for your interest in hearing our stories. As Jim mentioned, my name is Chad Lehman, and I'm the owner of Lehman Farms, Inc. here in Eureka, Illinois, right about in the middle of Illinois. I'm the third generation to farm this land, and I still have the privilege of working alongside my dad. My wife, Stacy, and I have four daughters spread out through high school and college currently, and we hope that one or more of them at some point would take the reins over here at our farm. We raise corn and soybeans. We have operated a seed dealership for many years, and we market approximately 90,000 hogs a year. I came back to the farm after high school, and we've steadily grown the farm over the last almost 30 years. Obviously, in my farming career, I've never seen anything quite like what we've seen over the last 2.5 months. In many ways, those 2.5 months feel a little bit like a lifetime, given the decisions that we've been faced with, not unlike other industries. I think back to early March, we were consumed with, you know, the usual issues of preparing to put a crop in the ground and the ongoing trade talks with China and the usual animal health concerns coming out of a long winter. And then all of a sudden, a couple weeks later, in mid-March, you begin to see this writing on the wall as packers begin to talk about the fact that they may be needing to shut down due to employee health concerns, which was all of our, as hog producers, that was our greatest fear as this thing began, was what are we going to do if we can't find a place to go with pigs? And so, by mid-March, we were talking to vets and nutritionists about radically changing diets so that we could keep pigs from gaining weight. And we were talking about how do we adjust ventilation in barns to accommodate 15-pound pigs up to 300-pound pigs. Those are quite different environment needs for those range of weights, all in the same barn. But we knew that given the fact we were going to be housing pigs much longer than usual, that we were going to have to, break rules that we've written for our farms long before about, we're going to empty barns of market pigs. We're going to wash, we're going to disinfect before bringing in baby pigs. Well, there was just not room to do that. So we accommodated the whole gamut of sizes. We had, I think all of us had employees who were just as uncertain as we were and anxious as we were about how are we going to get through this? And so as I think as Kevin just spoke to, how can we remain optimistic as owners? How can we reassure these employees that we're going to take care of them? And we also needed to alleviate the health concerns that they had about coming to work. So we were trying to balance that as well. Speaking for my employees here on our farm, I was just so impressed with the way they responded to this crisis, as they didn't need to be told they were essential. They already knew they were essential. They already knew that they had to come in and take care of pigs. These pigs were not going to take care of themselves. And so our employees responded just valiantly, and they came to work and they took care of pigs, and they continue to do that. They adapted quickly. I think Mike or Kevin, maybe both of them, referred to contract growers. So many of us as hog producers utilize other farmers who own their barns and raise our pigs in them and provide labor. Our contract growers responded the same way our employees did. They step up to the plate and they make changes in their barns, and they shuffle animals from barn to barn to try to create room so that we can get baby pigs in, and just were as flexible as need be to accommodate these disruptions. So fast forward to today, and it's day to day. It's hard to look even a week ahead because packers are still not able to give much of a lead time at all for us as to scheduling loads. So it continues to be difficult to know how much feed to deliver to the various sites because we're unsure how long those animals are going to be there. And so we don't want too much feed left over there, but we need to have enough. We continue to try and keep pig weights from getting out of hand and pigs getting too heavy. So we shuffle pigs from barn to barn, and we continue to keep market pigs on holding diets just to keep them from gaining too much weight. I think that as hog farmers, to be in this business, you need to be optimistic. And I think we're hopeful and we're optimistic that we get through these times, but we're also realists, and we know that we understand the size and the scope of this problem. And it's humbling to know that we're going to need further help to continue to be able to supply pork to consumers. But I think we're up to the challenge. And so with that, I look forward to answering any questions you may have alongside my fellow producers here from Iowa and Minnesota. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chad. And before we get to Q&A, I should mention that Mike, Kevin, and Chad were all kind enough to videotape some expanded comments on the COVID situation and the challenges they're facing on their farms and the challenges being faced across the industry. And you can find the links to those videos in our press release that should be in your inbox, and it's certainly on our website. So I encourage you to take a look at those. Celine, with that, we'll open it up for questions and answers.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. We have our first question from the line of Jackie Faka from Feedstock. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for opening this up for questions. I just wondered if maybe all of the producers or anyone that wants to answer, obviously the CFAP program, we do have more details about it. So I just wondered if you could just give your insight on how much that is helping. And then as you look towards what you would need going forward, is the euthanization payments the most important? or, you know, as you kind of look to forward and how you manage the days ahead and continue to allow cash flow and keeping things running and open, what are the most top priorities for you as a business owner and on your farm?
Thanks, Jackie. Hey, AV, do you want to start with that one and other producers can follow?
Yep, I'll start. We appreciate that CFAP appears to reach more pork producers than those included in USDA's trade retaliation relief, but it falls short of what is needed to sustain thousands of impacted producers. Our hog farmers are facing a significant financial and emotional crisis and are set to lose more than $5 billion collectively as the value of hogs have plummeted. They also face staggering costs associated with depopulation and disposal. MPPC continues to work with Congress and the administration on efforts to help hog producers get through this crisis. That's why we're urging the Senate to adopt companion legislation that includes the livestock agricultural measures included in the HEROES Act. Unlike the USDA program, the HEROES Act does not mandate payment restrictions, ensuring that relief is extended to those farmers who are most heavily invested in pork production. We ask that the USDA maintain the structure in any implementation.
Thanks, AV. Mike, do you want to have anything to add there? Mike Foxton?
Yeah, sure. I agree completely with AV's comments. You kind of were asking about priority wise. I certainly think that payments for farmers who are having to euthanize and dispose of pigs has kind of got to be front and center, because we're all losing money with every single pig we send to market right now. So we need to stop that bleeding at some point. But the farmers who are being forced into euthanization, it's a double whammy. Not only are they getting nothing for that animal that they have spent considerable time and resources on, but then they're also incurring the cost for euthanasia and disposal, and so that's just such a devastating blow emotionally, but also financially, that we really need to get help to producers in that situation, because like I said, those of us who are fortunate to not be in that situation yet, we fully realize that the clock is still ticking and our time could still come, as much as we want to put that off. But long term, CFAP, is putting a little over $1 billion back towards producers. So we've obviously got a ways to go to get back to that $5 billion mark. And none of us are saying that everyone needs to be made whole through this. My concern is that we need to throw a lifeline to these family farms to just help them hang on and get through this until things can turn around, because history has shown us that once these family farms shut down and have to call it quits, that's the end of that family's legacy, and that's the end of their story. It's never coming back again. It's just the world we live in now is not conducive to starting a farm up from the ground like it used to be, and so that's my concern, is that we're gonna lose a lot of really great generational family farms through this if we don't get some help.
Thank you, Mike. Any other comments?
I was just gonna quick add, this is Kevin Hugeson, that the CFAP program has helped to increase the amounts, and I know sometimes these dollar amounts seem like a lot, but like Mike had mentioned, that the losses are so immense per pig. And then also a lot of the family farms now, is just more than a husband and wife. There's anywhere from three families to, I know families up the, or family farms that have like 10 different, actually families are involved in the operation. So the number of pigs adds up and the dollar amount adds up in a hurry. So that's one thing that why this is such a, the dollars get so big in a hurry.
Thank you, Kevin. Operator, we'll take the next question.
We have our next question coming from the line of Mike Dorning with Bloomberg News. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for doing the call. I actually have a question that's related to this, but a little bit tangential about pricing for pork and hog farmers. You know, there's been this talk of the shutdowns in the plants and the squeeze on producer prices. One of my colleagues is writing a story about one aspect of this, and he asked me to ask, would hog farmers like to see a change in the way animals are priced? Some companies, such as Smithfield, have gone the route of vertical integration, where packers have an ownership of the animals. And in view of what's happened, do you all think that closer relationships with packers are a solution, or is the opposite direction better to go, where more animals would be sold out in open negotiated markets?
I'm going to ask Neil Dirks, our CEO, to respond to that one, Mike. Neil?
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Jim. I think generally speaking, MPPC and the producer leadership that directs MPPC understands the need for coordination. You heard these producers talk about having to work with their packers to get scheduling of loads, things in this order. When it comes to the pricing mechanisms, it has evolved over years. And part of it has been, it has evolved because producers have desired to have some more, I guess, stability in their mechanisms with packers. And with that, there's been a response. And of course, with that, that's why we've seen, and sometimes you talk contracts, we're not talking about production contracts here. We're talking about marketing agreements. And with that, and mandatory price reporting reports that. And we've seen moves away from the negotiated market, part of which has been producers didn't want to spend the time negotiating on a daily basis. But there needs to be an evolution. Recently, our Competitive Markets Committee has been discussing the need for that evolution, including looking at more cutout pricing that goes on. But that, again, is all based on individual decisions between individual producers. I think MPPC's position is we just want to make sure that there's broad options available to everybody.
And has this sort of crisis altered thinking in one direction or another on this?
I think the point with it is there's a lot, generally speaking, it's been a longer term discussion. There's obviously been concerns on it and before this happened, and now there are concerns on it. But it's one of the things that comes into this is that we still have a negotiated market reported every day. But the question a lot of people are asking is, so how does that relate to the fact that our harvest hasn't been able to handle all the pigs that were ready, according to the pig report? And so I think there's some evolution, and I think it's going to play out over time, Mike.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks for the question, okay. Mike. Celine, next question.
We have our next question coming from the line of Spencer Chase with AgriPulse. Your line is open.
Yeah, appreciate you all taking the time to chat with us a little bit today. Wanted to talk about, obviously, a subject that I'm sure none of you are excited to talk about, the issue of potential depopulation of some of these herds. Wondering what, you know, if there's kind of a 30,000-foot view you could offer, you know, either from one of the producers or from a member of MPPC staff, in terms of just what the ask is at this point in terms of potential assistance in a future coronavirus aid bill for depopulation protocols, be it direct payments, conservation payments. Wondering if there's a blueprint MPPC is working from at this point, and then just if somebody could just speak to the general importance of getting assistance for that depopulation, that would be appreciated. Thanks.
Thanks, Spencer. Hey, Nick Giordano, maybe you could talk a little bit about the HEROES Act and the provisions that MPPC supports in the HEROES Act, and then any producers who also want to comment on Spencer's question would be great.
Certainly. The House passed HEROES Act has ag and livestock provisions, as AV and others have said, that MPPC fully supports, and our number one priority is to get these provisions incorporated wholesale into the next COVID relief package, which we know is not going to be the House passed bill, which obviously is a Democratic bill, but politics is the art of compromise. And we and a lot of other people think that there's going to be another COVID bill, that there should be. So we're very eager to hold on to make that happen as soon as possible, and to hold on to the House provisions, and specifically the House passed bill provides for depopulation of payments to producers, compensation for depopulation, which is going on. It's no secret. It's unfortunate. And as you've heard these producers say, this is like no event ever in the hog farming sector. I mean, it's unprecedented. And while Congress's action on the CARES Act is appreciated, for the hog sector, it's not enough. We need more. And there is more in the House bill, which is why we're eager to get the Senate working on another COVID package, and to get something in front of the president that looks like, at least with respect to livestock and ag, that looks like what's in the House bill. So, yeah, it provides compensation to producers on a value determined that would be determined by Secretary of Agriculture. As one of the producers said, the expectation, nobody here expects to be made whole, but the losses are so tremendous that if there's not further help from the government, we are going to lose a significant portion of the industry. I mean, it's really a catastrophe. And there are other things we like in the bill as well. There's more money for direct payments, not just for hog farmers, but for others in agriculture who also are hurting. Obviously, we know why. We may be unfortunately at the far reaches of the pain meter. Many other sectors of the economy, including others in ag, are hurting. And this bill provides more indirect payments. It amends the CCC charter to specifically reimburse producers for euthanasia and removal and disposal. That's the Commodity Credit Corporation. So it amends the charter. That's really important for us. And then, as AV pointed out, there's also $300 million appropriated for USDA to carry out the provisions of the Animal Health Protection Act. And, first and foremost, that's going to be COVID support. A lot of the animal health labs across the country are being used to support COVID. That's really important. And that there's other priorities that are important to us as well that could be realized through these funds. So yeah, there's money. There's money appropriated. In fact, it's an open checkbook as much as needed. It's not just for hog farmers. It's for other livestock and other sectors should they have to depopulate. But I think, again, unfortunately, on the pain meter, we're the ones that have been in the red zone for a while, and we're the ones that are going to be there for a while.
Just a quick follow-up, if I may. Do you guys have a specific dollar amount you're looking for in terms of depopulation assistance?
Nick, do you want to take that?
Well, the House bill was open-ended. And I think, if you ask not just hog farmers, but other sectors of the economy, they're going to tell you that's a really positive thing. So, this is no secret. Euthanization is going on. We're talking here potentially about millions of animals. It's a lot of money. As you heard one of the producers, I think it was Kevin, say current losses are $60 to $70 per animal. I mean, and then when you think about an animal that can't make it into the food chain, I mean, that's why they're being euthanized in spite of everything these farmers are trying to do. The unfortunate reality is that many are going to be euthanized. It's a lot of money. So we're talking billions here.
Spencer, this is Chad Lehman, and you asked for sort of the 30,000 foot view on this. And so I'll give you a little more of a view from the farm level on this decision. And I think most hog farmers would probably echo this, but the three things that we think about here on our farm on this decision of euthanization and disposal would be, we're going to push this decision back as long as we possibly can. Most hard decisions you should just make and go forward with, but this one's too hard. So we're going to push it back as long as we can and buy as much time as we can. I think secondly, as owners, we're going to try and shield our employees as much as we can from this catastrophe. It goes against everything that they've been trained in taking care of pigs, in that they're needing to make this decision. And so we're going to try to shield them from it. And then lastly, if it comes down to it, we are going to do it as humanely as possible.
Thank you, Chad. Celine, we'll take the next question.
Again, in order to ask a question, please simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. That is star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If your question has been answered or want to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. We have our next question coming from the line of Megan Boynton with Bloomberg Government. Your line is open.
Great. Thank you guys so much for having this. In talking about the specific aid you're looking for, have the commodity purchases of excess meat for the Farmers to Families Food Box program made an impact? What more could be done for pork producers with that specific program?
Neil, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, and it's difficult because obviously that program is the food box program is relatively it's a innovative and kind of unique program initially, and there has been impact. Again, one of the values of those programs, beyond the fact of the situation we have with unemployment in the nation, and you guys have all seen the video or probably maybe first person reported on the demand for food for Americans right now. And the USDA acted very rapidly with the food box program. And one of the things that came up, and that's why, you know, there's so much talk about things are so unprecedented here. And of course, we had this situation with our capacity being constricted, but I think we forget that before the capacity was restricted, with the shelter-in-place orders and the closing of restaurants, our food service business was significantly impacted. And we do that the U.S. pork industry, at least the numbers I've seen going into this crisis, about a quarter of our market was based on food service, and primarily a lot of that was based on things like ribs and other kinds of things for and shoulders for barbecue, but also bacon. And with that, when that shuttering took place, there was product that was basically left homeless. I mean, it didn't have anywhere to go because, in fact, there was product that was returned. And that's why this food box program has been a benefit to the pork industry. My understanding was the target was $100 million a month for 6 months of meat, $100 million of produce, and $100 million of dairy products. I believe those were the numbers. Please don't quote me on those. But it gives you the relative perspective. The dairy industry was significantly impacted because of the closure of schools. a lot of fluid milk, obviously goes to school children. So it was a way of helping with that, that kind of that first or second backlog we had, which was the food service product getting out. And our understanding is that it's being utilized. There are other, and primarily because of what had been backed up, initially we were told, and we've not seen the numbers on this, but we were told initially pork was one of the more dominant available things that could be done because of the speed that this program went forward on. But I've not seen any numbers on that at this point. And now we're in a situation that if anybody watches our cutout, we went from back at that time to the value of our wholesale cuts of meat was hovering around 40 cents a pound. And it, and with the constriction in our packing capacity, which reduced the available amount of pork coming out, it went up to over a dollar a pound on the cutout. It has been coming back a little bit because as we get more capacity online, there's more abundance. But back to the box program, we believe it was beneficial, particularly because of the backlog on food service, but I am not aware of any numbers, and I assume it's going to take a little bit of time to see exactly what the impact was.
Thank you, Neil. And that was Neil Dirks, NPPC CEO, for those who might not have recognized who was speaking. Celine, next question.
We have our next question coming from the line of Jerry Hagerson from the Hagerson Report. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. A few days ago, when Secretary Perdue was talking about the meat situation, he said that perhaps the meat industry should consider co-op processing. And I wondered if you have thought about that, if you've thought about these problems that have obviously come up with these big packers, and whether you think that is an option. Would pork producers be interested in starting their own co-op processing plants?
I'm going to ask Neil to comment on that.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Jerry. Good question. And there are actually co-ops that exist in the U.S. pork industry. And this is something that has evolved over time. And the scale of those co-ops vary greatly. You've got one that's structured as a co-op that has functionally a modern two-shift plant. And then you have others that are smaller scale efforts. And it has been something, in fact, NPPC back in the 90s did a lot of work on this to get information available. And as we go forward in the future, I believe that there will be more discovery and discussion of producers about using co-ops. Now, again, that's a business structure as opposed to some other mechanism for ownership, but it does allow some flexibility. And I know that there are other, for instance, there are other proteins that co-ops are maybe a bit more abundant than they are in the pork industry. But I do believe that that will be something that will be under consideration in the future as producers look at how they add stability to the long-term outlook for their operations.
If I could ask a follow-up, do we have any knowledge of how these co-ops have done in this period? Whether they've had a lot of problems with COVID like these other plants, and also whether they've been able to keep up their numbers?
I don't have any empirical data. My anecdotal data is the one I was referring to is that it has continued to operate, but I think the business structure is less of a question as it relates to COVID impacts as it is, that's becomes a public health issue. And I don't know, but my sense is that co-op I was referring to has been operating under normal conditions. I do not know what they've been facing as it relates to workers that had contracted COVID or whatever, but I do not think it had impacted their output through this.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry. Thank you, Neil. Celine, next question.
We have our next question coming from the line of David Pitt with Associated Press. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you very much for taking our questions. And I apologize if you've answered these earlier. I jumped on the call a bit late. But I'm wondering if you can tell me what the current backlog of hogs is on farms and how much longer the euthanization might be required, and at what point will we catch up, you know, with the plants now going back online, although at lower capacity. And if I might, a second question, Iowa has an animal rights group that's about to release tomorrow, I think, a video of euthanization involving the shutdown of the ventilation in the barn. And so I just wanted to know, you know, consumers or people who might not be, you know, involved in the industry might see that and be pretty shocked by what they see and hear. And I just wanted to know what you might have to say about that. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, David. I'll start with the last one. I mean, you know, the COVID-driven need to euthanize animals to prevent animal suffering is, you know, incredibly tragic situation for producers. And we're not here to talk about an extremist group who's using a tragedy that is really beyond anyone's control for fundraising purposes. We're here to talk about critical federal aid that's needed by American hog farmers to weather this crisis. So I think that's about all we're going to say on that topic. On your first question, Neil, do you want to talk about the backlog? And then if any of our producers have comments beyond that, we can listen to those.
Yeah, and there is no odometer or speedometer specifically on exactly how many pigs are backed up. But I will tell you that talking to economists, that using the reference point of the March pig report on animals coming to market and laying against that the harvest capacity that was achieved since the pig report came out at the end of March, it would indicate that there are probably somewhere close to, well, between 2.5 and 3 million head of hogs that were not harvested or that were ready for harvest and then were just unable to find a slot. Now, in addition to that, what's going on is that, and I think it's pretty obvious from listening to the producers on the phone, these guys are really, a couple of things. One, this is such a heartbreaking thing to contemplate, but they are also genius, creative, and flexible. And there have been a lot of people looking at donating animals, things in this order. So there is no given number, but we do know that it has slowed down, that the numbers, we were just unable to slaughter what the government said were our market-ready animals. Now, some of those animals, maybe that were older, and you heard the discussion about trying to do nutrition for farms that were very much to keep pigs from growing. And if we take a look at the data from USDA on weights of animals, it spiked significantly, indicating that there were animals backed up. It has been coming down a little bit. Part of that is that I think there have been some people harvesting the larger animals. Now, there at some point is the size of animal that is too large, and that varies by plant because of, you know, just the size of the animal going through the processing can create problems. But at this juncture, the numbers that most commonly get referred to are those numbers that were related to the animals that were ready for market, according to the USDA report, and what our USDA harvest numbers were, and that somewhere in the category of 2.5 to 3 million pigs. I will tell you that right now, according to economist Steve Meyer, based off the pig report, we are seeing probably 2.4 million and a few more pigs that are ready for harvest per week. and this is seasonally, this is the time we have fewer pigs just biologically. And if we see what the harvest was yesterday, which was 415,000 head, that would give you about a 2.2 million head harvest on a 5.4-day week, which means we're probably still backing up maybe 100 and 150,000 a week yet. We haven't gotten to the point of stasis on this, where it's you know, where our the current market ready hogs can get processed. So that's the best information I have, Jim.
This is Chad Lehman, David, and I can just speak to your question on the backlog of hogs related to the current situation. On our farm, we are we're currently backed up just over 4,000 pigs in the last couple of months, and both of the packers that we work with are running currently at about 75% capacity. So unless they can somehow figure out how to miraculously harvest about 130% of their usual capacity, we will continue to back up pigs, albeit at a slightly slower pace. But what's important to understand is you can't just shut the spigot off and turn it back on with pork production.
Thanks, Chad. David, thanks for the question. And we're going to take just one more question, operator.
So our next question from the line of Kevin Schultz with National Hog Farmer. Your line is open.
Thank you. And I don't know if this is a good one to end on or not, but obviously we all know this is a very emotional situation that everybody in the pork industry chain is involved in. And Chad Lehman, you kind of alluded to this, and I'd like the other input from Mike and Kevin as well. You talked about reassuring your employees, and Chad, you laid out the three parts or three steps of the depopulation that you're going to go through, and you mentioned the shielding your employees from that process. How do you go about reassuring your employees and some who may be your own family that, you know, trying to remain as positive as possible, but how do you reassure what we're going through and we'll all get through it?
Well, thanks, Kevin, for the question. This is Chad, and I'll certainly let Mike and Kevin give their thoughts on this. But as owners and CEOs of our farms, we've got a model how we want our employees to respond. And so we're positive, and we try to dwell on what's going right. And we also try to explain that there will be opportunities through this. There'll be learning opportunities. There'll be opportunities to grow from this. And so while it sounds maybe kind of cliche, I think we've just got to continue to come to work every day, encourage them. Oftentimes, we are, as farmers, we're men and women of faith, and so we rely on that faith to give us a hope that we'll get through this. But I do appreciate what the employees are going through in this, the anxieties they have, and we just continue to work through it day by day to help them.
Thanks, Chad. Mike or Kevin, do you want to add on?
Yeah, this is Mike. I would echo those comments and just, you know, add my own perspective to it. We're talking all the time with, you know, amongst our family members, our employees, you know, and when I've had my kids with me in the barns, you know, we always talk about putting the pigs first. You know, their needs come first, because we by raising pigs, we have accepted the responsibility that we are going to care for their every need. And so, you know, that at our house, at least, that gets summed up by saying the pigs eat first. If there's a problem that needs to be taken care of, and if we have sick pigs, if we have pigs that there's a something's broken in their barn or something like that, that gets fixed. You know, if it's dinner time, dinner waits until that gets taken care of. And so to turn a complete 180 from that kind of attitude where we've constantly reinforced that every day do what's best for the pig, and then to turn around and say, you know, well, now we're just going to see these pigs go to waste. You know, it's demoralizing. And that's why, you know, we're sensitive to the effect that it's having on us and our families and our employees. You know, this is not what we signed up for, and this is not something that anybody wants to do. And, you know, to be quite honest, just even having to think about it and having to put a contingency plan into place is pretty demoralizing in itself, let alone having to actually do it. So, you know, it's tough, and we're concerned about the long-term ramifications that it's going to, you know, mentally have on our families and employees.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, this is Kevin, and I'll just quick share too that from the employee perspective, we kind of go back to our values of our farm and their honesty, teamwork, safety, hard work, communication, and respect for people and animals. And, you know, concentrate on the positives, the things that we can control to keep being better pork producers and more efficient. And so that's what we try to come across for them. And then, you know, but from a family perspective, boy, it's, like I mentioned in the past, it's thoughts that you never had before of, you know, what the future looks like. And especially when you got kids and potentially grandkids that you'd love to have continue our legacy on or our farming operation, and realize that that might not happen is humbling. And, but we just got to go back to take a day at a time and let our faith help us through these tough times.
Thanks a lot, Kevin. And with that, we're gonna wind down the call. I want to thank all of our producer leaders for being on the call and sharing their stories. Also thanks to the media who joined us. And we apologize to anybody if we didn't get to your question. Please feel free to reach out to me, Jim Monroe, or Rachel Gantz, if you have additional questions or if we didn't get to yours. And again, thanks to everybody for joining the call. Operator, that concludes the call. Thanks, everyone.